In this episode, we speak with Jonathan Rubinstein, the founder and CEO of Joe Coffee, which is a unique coffee company based out of New York City. In addition to brewing and serving the highest quality coffee out of 25 bespoke cafes, the company extends its offerings through a wide range of licensing and wholesale relationships. Jonathan founded Joe Coffee in 2003 after a stressful career as a talent agent. His current investors include Danny Meyer, among others. Three key takeaways from this episode include: 1. Think about handing over a little bit of sunshine with each customer interaction. 2. Diversifying business lines can create resiliency in your business model. 3. Tough feedback can make you better for the long run. I'm your host, RJ Lumba. We hope you enjoy the show.
RJ Lumba is the executive chairman of Market Insight Media and the managing partner of Growth Cap. He is the host of Great Entrepreneurs, a podcast for driven entrepreneurs and business owners. Our podcast covers all topics related to the entrepreneurial journey, from ideation to execution to optimization and to reaping the rewards of a well-run business. In the minutes ahead, we'll share with you unique insights and tactics from some of today's most accomplished and inspiring entrepreneurs.
Jonathan, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. Would like to kick off at the very start. What made you start a coffee company? It doesn't seem like you had a background in coffee nor in business. So would love to hear about those early days.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I'm honored to be a guest on your show. I started Joe in 2003, so just over 19 years ago. And to your point, it's true, I did not have a business background or a coffee background, but I had left a very high-pressure job as a talent agent and a talent manager for actors. And I was sort of looking for the opposite, that cliche story of somebody who works in a very intense corporate environment and then wants to bake bread or open a yoga studio. And I had the list that I think many people have, and coffee was on it. The idea of opening a single cafe was just very romantic to me, and I thought would be enjoyable, and maybe someday there would be three and I would manage them my whole life. I will say I have always had a very strong entrepreneurial spirit. So even though this was my first real business, I was the kid who started a cookie company in middle school, and I opened a day camp when I was in college, and have always loved to start and run projects. So I felt fairly equipped to start what was a very small business. And ultimately, I literally had a list of three or four romantic ideas, and I stumbled upon the space which became the first cafe in Greenwich Village, New York. And it was just the sort of perfect romantic vision for a cafe with the brick walls on a very historic street with a patio in front. And I saw for rent sign and I made an offer and it was accepted. The next day I said, gosh, I guess it's going to be coffee. Time to learn everything I can about coffee and running a cafe. And that's how it started.
Well, now you've been doing this for a long time. It's no easy feat to survive in any business for that matter. Coffee in particular, one would think is a tough business, but you had something probably unique about what you were doing. Can you tell us about why you think your business has been able to not only survive, but grow?
I think the reason that we were successful right off the bat is that even though we were doing coffee and lots of people were doing coffee, I came at it from a very different angle, which was I'm going to turn this into a place that has the best coffee that anyone has had in New York City. And New York City has the best of everything. But somehow at this time in 2003, this specialty coffee movement, third wave coffee, people used to call it, literally didn't exist. And so even though I originally thought, let me open one cute cafe in Greenwich Village, I did realize that I had to do something to set us apart. And the angle simply was, if we're going to open a cafe and serve coffee, let's make it better than any other cafe in New York City. And that was the focus from day one. And this movement, which was so big on the West Coast at the time, San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, simply hadn't arrived here. So a lot of our success was luck and timing. but then also just really sticking to this singular focus of continuing to elevate to make sure that people walked out of a Joe Cafe and said, wow, that coffee is amazing. And it wasn't about the furniture or the music or the art necessarily. It was the culinary product.
So it sounds like there's always two components when it comes to that cafe experience. It's the coffee itself, and then it's the actual ambiance, so to speak. Let's take the first part, the actual product. To a newbie, one would think like, oh, I have to just find the right supplier to get the best, you know, maybe I'll taste every single variety. And then from there, I will select. I'm simplifying it, of course. How did you actually go about that process?
Well, in my case, I was lucky because a quote unquote professional barista from Seattle, which was really the mecca of specialty coffee back then, had moved to New York, and someone introduced me to her. And together, we sort of started the journey of the culinary part. So yes, it was making sure that we had great beans, but there is equipment, which is a very important part of serving great coffee. There is certainly the training and the execution in something that is much more difficult, especially when you're talking about espresso, to make a beautiful espresso drink than pouring a glass of wine or pouring a cup of drip coffee. So we knew together there was a lot to learn and that we would evolve. I always say, I think if I went back in a time machine and tasted the coffee now, probably would be a little bit horrified. But in 2003, when we were living in a total coffee bubble, it was so much better and so different than anything else happening in New York that people kind of flocked. At that time, nobody was talking about really the origins of the coffee or the farmer, this ubiquitous latte art that you've come to expect in any specialty cafe. We were the first to pour it in New York City, which sounds sort of crazy now because you can walk down any street in New York and get a beautiful coffee with latte art. But at the time, it simply didn't exist. And it really set us apart. And I should also say, though, you didn't ask this as a question yet, the other angle for us, and I think a lot of this was my Midwest upbringing, was we wanted to serve excellent, beautiful coffee, but we also wanted to serve it with a side of great hospitality. We really wanted people to walk out of Joe and say, that coffee is delicious, but the people who work there are so nice and they recognize me and they care about me. And over the years, I think that's kind of been quantified. And our investor, Danny Meyer, who sort of coined the phrase of enlightened hospitality and is known as the king of hospitality, over the years, we've turned that into a real program. But at the beginning, it was just, again, New York City, anonymous, gruff. Why don't we have a place where everyone is so nice and we serve great coffee? And those things together should make what I think has made us successful, which is a special experience that exceeds expectations.
That leads us to core values. And I noticed you had it, I think it was on your LinkedIn profile for the company. And I was really taken by it because it seems like the company and you are very much embodying these values. Did that start from you, meaning like this business is an extension of you, or was it purposely designed as you were kind of building and cultivating the business?
I think it's a little of both. Interestingly, in 2018, we hired a big firm to help us with our brand identity and really to find a way to set us apart from all the other great coffee companies which had emerged. So we did a very deep dive and a big study into what our values were. And in all of the interviews and conversations, what they ended up bringing us were the values that were exactly what my values were in 2003, but I hadn't yet put it into a clear and concise set of words that ended up sort of driving us and has driven us since the beginning in 2003, but does continue to drive us now. I think a lot of those just are inherent, and a lot of them were just thinking about what would I want if I walked into the quintessential cafe that gave me this great experience. Teaching them has proven to be easier than we expected. You have your value set and the way that you want hospitality given to customers, although oftentimes that's intrinsic, I believe, and hiring. But when you have 250 or so people working and you want them all to live your values every day in an environment that's very difficult sometimes, the sort of rinse and repeat the intensity of working in a busy cafe, we have developed a very strong training program, but ultimately they have to buy into our value set because I don't think you can fake true enlightened hospitality.
I'm really interested in this idea of enlightened hospitality. What happens when a customer walks in frustrated? They're having a bad day. Maybe they're rude as they're ordering, even occupying the space. They're not in the best mood. How do you train folks to deal with that? Is that something you kind of address up front?
We do, and you won't be surprised to know that it happens often. I think a lot of it is just talking about empathy and learning to put ourselves in the customer's situation of the moment. Why are they having a bad day? And then what can we do to try to make their day a little bit better? Because one of the beautiful things about this business is you are really handing over, and it sounds cheesy, but you're handing over this little bit of sunshine and you are making a human connection. Oftentimes you're making more of a connection or more often of a connection than these people get really anywhere else. And so it's always just remembering that we have the ability to make someone's day a little bit better if we do it right. And we sort of understand what it's like to be in their shoes. And certainly we're not perfect. We're not robots. We're not always right. And every situation is different. But generally, I think we find that we can turn their day around a little bit just by being empathetic and sympathetic and just kind.
And speaking to you, it truly seems like you're approaching the business, not primarily from a profit perspective or empire building perspective. You're truly approaching it from an experience creation perspective. And sometimes I think that's the reason for a business's success is because they're so focused on the actual providing of value. How has that played into just your overall approach?
Yeah, I mean, I think I have good instincts and I certainly make sure to surround myself with people who I can learn from. But at the end of the day, especially 19 years into it and 25-ish cafes, it is a business and there are expectations. We do have investors. We do have a board. If I sound too, you know, sort of utopitarian about the sort of perfect experience being more important than the business and profitability, that's probably not true. It's finding the balance between the two of them. And as we've grown, there have certainly been stumbling blocks and tough decisions to make where ultimately I would love the vision of my business to be exactly what it was in 2003, but that's not always realistic when you're looking at balancing a budget and being profitable and making sure that you're compliant. And all those things really change. But I think if a core value from leadership and the buy-in from your whole, I call them our HQ team, but the other people I work with in my office and marketing and HR and the managers and district managers and things like that all share this value set and want to operate the business coming from and thinking about this value set, it's still easy, I think, to do something that is special, even if at times you have to make hard decisions because it is a for-profit business. And I do think about that differently. I think I have no choice. The responsibility is much greater now than it was when I was a 32-year-old person who was supporting myself and only had to think about paying rent and paying the employees and didn't have overhead and expectations. And it was a much simpler world. But I don't think that means that we lose everything or much of what makes us special, because at the end of the day, if that's what we did, I know there are lots of other ways to make money. I could be in other businesses, but I still choose to provide specialty coffee in this kind of environment. And therefore, I still have the ability to make the kinds of decisions that make me feel good about what I'm doing with my team.
I think you're up to 25 locations and you also do wholesaling. Can you talk about the various kind of lines of business you're in and your vision for those lines?
Absolutely. For many years, we were a chain of cafes, people would call them. And really, we were just known for a place that you would get a beautiful espresso drink and a snack and have this connection, which I think I've talked enough about. We realized over the years that we needed to diversify and turn into a real coffee company rather than just a group of cafes. And the obvious way to do that to us was to begin roasting coffee. So importing green coffee from all over the world, bringing it here, roasting it, and distributing it, because it allowed us to go into this wholesale business of supplying other cafes and restaurants and grocery stores with our product. And that is very profitable. The margins are better than they are in the cafes. And the sky is the limit with limited capital to grow that part of the business. We also went into a catering business, which is more sort of hyper-focused in New York City, but we do a pop-up experience at a wedding or a bar mitzvah or a film shoot or a corporate event. And we have grown that to about 500 events per year. And that's turned out to be a pretty significant part of our business. And then one other side business, which is teaching home enthusiasts how to make great coffee at home, be it a one-day brewing class or a six-week barista class, because we also think that's an extension of who we are. A big part of Joe is accessibility. A lot of specialty coffee is that sort of elitist, you've got to be super cool and have a great palate. And we're much more of everyone should feel comfortable coming in, whether they're a first-time coffee drinker or it's a gateway from Dunkin' or Starbucks into specialty coffee, or it's an 82-year-old who just wants a really nice place to sit and drink something that they think is delicious without any pretension. And so this sort of public education portion kind of spoke to that, making our product even more accessible for people and allowing them to feel good about brewing the coffee beans that they're now hopefully buying from us. And a lot of that was, I feel very lucky that we diversified because of the pandemic. Obviously, the cafes all shut for a long period of time, and we're still recovering, trying to get back to the numbers that we were seeing in 2019, which was probably the peak of our business. Had we not had these other business lines, had we not been doing mail order, direct to consumer coffee, had we not been in grocery stores, we would have been in, I think, some serious trouble. I think all of that has made us stronger as a company and has had us look at this company much more holistically with a different goal, which is to grow into hopefully a national player competing with, or I shouldn't say competing with, but playing alongside some of the bigger names like La Colombe and Counterculture and Stumptown and Intelligentsia that are less regional and more national, where we've been sort of New York City's hometown cafe, but we aspire now to do more. And I think part of that happens through these other business lines.
Do you foresee continuing to build the business out, or do you foresee eventually one day being part of a bigger corporation? What's your bigger picture for the overall company?
I think the answer is we remain flexible. We've been approached. Nothing has quite felt right. We'd like to grow a bit more. And then there's always going to be that struggle of what will my legacy, that sounds narcissistic, but what will Joe's legacy be if we sell to a, call it a Nestle? Can we still maintain what makes us special? And will people in Cleveland, Ohio or California still rave about the whole experience if we can't control it in the same way? So I think that remains to be seen. And I have enjoyed watching some of my contemporaries who have grown much faster than we have. I've seen what has sort of worked and what maybe hasn't worked as well for them as they've expanded and taken in more capital or been sold.
Now, reflecting on your journey since inception, were there any points in time that were particularly challenging where you almost felt like it would be difficult to continue on with the business?
I don't think anything that severe. We've definitely had ups and downs. Some of them have just been to sort of the company's ego. And one example I'll give is, I think it was 2008, we were about 5 years old, and the New York Times for the first time did a huge article on specialty coffee in the food section. It was the front page and it was probably 4 pages. And they talked about everybody who had turned New York City into this great coffee city, and they didn't include us at all. And I sort of said, well, we created coffee here. How could that happen? And I did have some connections to the writer, and I emailed and said, you know, gee, I'm just wondering, did something happen? Why we weren't included in this article at all? And he said, honestly, I think you guys have grown too fast. And I think that you have lost the ability to keep your eye on the prize and think quality over growth and sales. And it was a really important wake-up call that made us say, wait a second, we can never lose sight of that again. We need to revisit our quality control, our beans, our training program. And I believe that in some ways that was the best thing to happen to us, because I think we had gotten a little bit complacent that we're this super popular, successful place, and maybe we weren't as hyper-focused on the culinary as we had to be. There have certainly been other things. I mean, the pandemic, obviously for everyone, but for us, one of the things that I think has also made us special is we have retained our talent, even at the store level, the barista level, for much longer than I think many other cafes have. And there's a very special connection between the barista and the customer. And if you have come into Joe for 5 years, 7 years, and seen the same person every day, it's a really important relationship. And the people who have worked for us for a long time obviously have a deep understanding of our culture, a real appreciation of what they are doing. And during COVID, we had something like a 95% turnover rate. So we basically had to start from scratch and hiring what ended up being 250 people and training these people, but also hoping that they have the institutional knowledge, the right skill set, and sort of the cultural understanding for us to be Joe again was scary. And the truth is, it took us some time. I think there were many months when we reopened where we were not at our best because it just wasn't possible. And there were times I would walk into a cafe and say, I don't feel good about the hospitality. This is not the Joe that we were beforehand. But what can you do? You persevere and you try to hire the best people and to train them. But it has taken us this full 2 years of being reopened, I think, to get to a place where I feel proud and good about the experience across the fleet of stores. And that was really a low point for us, I think, reopening in that way.
There's so many different aspects to making a business work and thrive. What would be your key insight into kind of the most important aspect of being an entrepreneur?
I think it's the ability to see the trees in the forest and sweat the details and think constantly about the experience as much as you think about cogs and labor and growth, and really to find people and bring them in to understand in the same way that you do, that this is what makes us Joe. And I can only do so much myself, but you can do so much more. And then that trickles down level by level by level, all the way hopefully down to the bar backs. I think that's it. Sweat the small stuff, but also sweat the big stuff.
Well, we're coming up on time. I just have two final questions. One is, who inspires you?
You know, this is going to sound like there's a spin because it's too obvious, but it is Danny Meyer. And Danny Meyer, again, Union Square Hospitality Group, super famous restaurateur, creative Shake Shack. But I would have given that answer before Danny invested in us and before I had ever met him. It is astounding to me. I pinch myself that he is now my business partner when I devoured his book, Setting the Table, many years ago. It became our Bible. We taught it. And now the fact that I get to work with him, but I followed his business and watched the way he built something using kindness and compassion and this natural enlightened hospitality many years before we had any connection.
Final question. Can you give us a book recommendation?
Oh my goodness. Is this any kind of book?
Any kind of book. You already mentioned one. Would that be the same one, Setting the Table?
It would be. I'll also tell you that Howard Schultz's first book I found to be incredibly inspiring because he had this innate ability to really look at the experience and care deeply for it, even though it's perhaps changed over the years, but also very inspiring to see the way he built his business and brought his people along. I really loved that book and I read it several times back in the day.
Excellent. Well, Jonathan, I want to thank you again for taking the time. I know our audience will find this insightful. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thanks so much.